Today on Straight Talk Africa, Democrats are roaring out the heavy hitters on Wednesday night when U.S. President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden are expected to address the party's national convention. On Thursday, Hillary Clinton is expected to officially accept the Democratic nomination for president. What would a Hillary Clinton presidency mean for Africa? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, July 27th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the African diaspora reaction to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has weighed in on our topic through email, Facebook, and Twitter comments. And we'll read some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party made history Tuesday when Clinton became the first woman nominated to run for president by a major U.S. political party. But as much as the Democrats want to celebrate, there are challenges ahead in uniting the party as Clinton prepares to take on Republican Donald Trump in the general election. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Philadelphia.
Good afternoon, delegates. Are we ready to make some history?
Philadelphia is no stranger to history, and on Tuesday, it added another chapter, the first woman nominated for president by a major U.S. political party.
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Democrats officially nominated Clinton after the traditional roll call of the states, setting off a celebration inside the convention hall. The nominee later thanked the delegates via satellite from her home in New York.
This is really your victory. This is really your night.
Earlier, former President Bill Clinton brought the delegates to their feet with an impassioned appeal on behalf of his wife.
I hope you'll elect her. Those of us who have more yesterdays than tomorrow tend to care more about our children and grandchildren. The reason you should elect her is that in the greatest country on earth, we have always been about tomorrow. Your children and grandchildren will bless you forever if you do. God bless you. Thank you.
And in a bid for party unity, it was Clinton's former rival, Bernie Sanders, who urged his followers to join behind the former Secretary of State.
I move that all votes cast by delegates, be reflected in the official record. And I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party for President of the United States.
But in a sign of lingering party tensions, scores of Sanders delegates and supporters staged a convention walkout into a nearby media tent where they held a silent protest. Michael Grom is a Sanders delegate from Ohio.
They're representing that they have no voice in this democracy. They felt that they could completely shut out. Our democracy has been taken over by corporations.
Despite the discord, Clinton delegate Janet Buskey of Alabama was thrilled with the nomination.
All the rights denied to blacks, all the rights denied to women, we're sort of coming full circle, and I see a complete America.
With much of this week's focus on Democrats, Republican Donald Trump still has been busy on the campaign trail. Trump went after Hillary Clinton's record on military veterans Tuesday during a speech in North Carolina.
We know how she takes care of the veterans. Just look at her invasion of Libya and her handling of Benghazi, a disaster.
On Wednesday, the Democratic delegates will hear from President Barack Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and Clinton's vice presidential running mate, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine. Hillary Clinton will address the convention on Thursday. Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia.
Thanks, Jim, for that report. For the latest development from the Democratic Party convention, we are joined by my colleague, Vincent McCauley, host of Africa 54. Hello, Vincent.
Hey, hello, Shaka.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
What is the mood like in Philadelphia?
Well, it's been celebratory. It's been electric. I'm telling you, ecstatic here. History was made, and this has been a long time coming. And for the most powerful nation in the world, I think you could say that now democracy has gone full circle to have at least a woman nominee for a major political party. Whether she gets elected as president or not, that on its own is a great achievement. If she gets elected, you can imagine what that means. The history will have been made twice in a row. First, a black president, and then a female president. That is big, and that is the anticipation here. That is what people are celebrating. Ecstatic, I can tell you, it is the mood here in Philadelphia.
You know, Philadelphia sometimes is often referred to as the city of brotherly love. Does it look like it could probably not have happened anywhere else?
You know, probably. But I think the way it has been is that the momentum could be reflected all over the country. This looked like it was a moment for this particular party. But even with that love, still, you have to acknowledge that there's some who are not extremely excited about the results of things. And this is the hardcore diehard supporters of Bernie Sanders, who fought a bitter war for the nomination against Hillary Clinton. Of course, he himself has endorsed and urged his supporters to endorse her and, of course, vote for her. For them, you know, they don't feel that love as much. They're very, very disappointed.
Hillary Clinton obviously needs a united party. What do you think needs to happen in order for the supporters of Bernie Sanders to come on board?
You know, they already, the DNC officials say that they believe that at least 70% or even more will still vote for Hillary Clinton, given that if their alternative for them would be Donald Trump. But to kind of pull in the other, you know, percentage, whether it is 10% or 20%, they want to hear if Hillary will include the message that Bernie Sanders was, you know, propagating out there. They want to hear what Hillary will say about things like education, you know, the affordability, the issue of wages, the issue of expanding things like healthcare and so on and so forth. They want to hear that message included. They see what Bernie Sanders did as starting a revolution, and to the extent to which Hillary Clinton can move in that direction, of course, is something yet to be seen. But it is true and realistic to consider that there are some who will not be swayed. They will not transfer their loyalty to Hillary Clinton, a small hardcore kind of group.
You know as well as I do that our target audience is largely Africa. To what extent has Africa featured so far in that convention?
You know, we like to think that Africa should feature in such a convention. But let's face it, up to this point, I think the fight has been so bitter, and it's been around issues that will shape the perception of the American voter. This is to do with the character and the personalities that are running for this election. There has been a major attack on Hillary Clinton's character, and that has been what is coming on the defensive here. So they're talking about what she's done here in the United States, her fight against terrorism, how she has helped the United States become a big country or a more significant player internationally. So you can't expect them to talk too much about Africa at this point.
Well, Vincent, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Joining us in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Kay River Levinson, President and CEO of KRL International, LLC. She's also the author of Choosing the Hero, My Improbable Journey, and the Rise of Africa's First Woman President, and the Reverend Anyedi Okule, Executive Director, Africa Faith and Justice Network, based here in Washington, D.C. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's a great privilege.
You're most welcome.
Great privilege.
Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The US country code is 1. Let me come to you, River. You've been around, of course, for a very long time. You have seen lots of conventions. What does this particular Democratic National Convention mean to you, especially given that it is the first time that a major U.S. party nominates a female for the presidency of the United States of America?
Two comments to that. One is, I think whether you support Hillary or not, this is a moment in history. This is a celebration for our country, for the nation, for women and girls. So I think whether you're a partisan, number one. Number two is, as you mentioned, I've written a book. It's called Choosing the Hero, My Improbable Journey in the Rise of Africa's First Woman President. And so I have been working for two decades with President Sirleaf, who made history as the first woman elected on the African continent. And so for me, this is a celebratory success, knowing the trials and tribulations that Ellen Johnson Sirleaf went through to watch Hillary Clinton achieve her goal.
You're right, of course. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf was the first democratically elected president in Africa, but certainly not the first female head of state in Africa. In fact, that distinction goes, you know, to who? Ruth Perry.
Of Liberia.
Also Liberia.
Right. I should have said democratically elected, but absolutely.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
What about you, the good reverend? Your reaction?
I like that qualification, good reverend.
I think because there are probably some who are not so good.
No, this is something historic. And as you look at what has happened in American political history, you have a current president who has also made history, the first African-American to be elected to be the president. And now, for the first time, we have a woman nominated as the candidate. Actually, I have heard talks from Africans who sometimes says, my goodness, with all that America stands for in terms of women's rights, in terms of women's liberation, there hasn't been, over the years, a woman president or even a candidate. And I've had my friends point out to countries like Pakistan, India, etc., in Africa, you know, that that happened before the U.S. And so that this is coming up, partisanship notwithstanding, but just the fact that there is a woman nominated by a major party to be the flag bearer, they see that as something very unique. And in a way, speaking well of the U.S. political history on the heels of an African-American, now a woman nominated. So it's something good on the one hand, but also, as I say, there are other issues that maybe we'll discuss later that people see this movement on both sides, not just the Democratic Party's convention, but both Democrats and Republicans. So what people are seeing here is that there is a major movement here. One, you have a total outsider who comes in and dislodges 16 candidates. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, within this place, you have Bernie Sanders, who was little known, who comes in and sweeps a lot of followers. And so people are watching and say, what's really going on?
So it looks like really a year of making history either way.
A year of making history either way, yeah.
Now we'll pause for a short break. and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Dem Convention. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githi Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, River. There are people who say the United States is arguably one of the most progressive nations in the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And yet, it has taken simply too long, really, to have a woman president of the United States. People will tell you, look at the United Kingdom. You have the second prime minister so far in Theresa May. You had, of course, Margaret Thatcher, who obviously made some history of sorts. And, of course, you go to Germany, you have an Angela Merkel. And when you go to the Scandinavian countries, it's almost normal. Mm-hmm. Why did it take this long for the United States, for a major party, to come up, frankly, with someone to occupy 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue?
I think it has to do with the institutional nature of our parties and looking at the nominating process that you talked about. I mean, the difficulty of building that type of network. So I think that's a big part of it. I think the nature of just having to get that level of financial support. But I would also go back and say Hillary came pretty close in 2008. So she had an opportunity. And so I think that it's likely that it was just took somebody with that type of name recognition, support, institutional nature of the party, and also with her husband, the president, to be able to emerge like that. But I think that at the same time, we can look at our Senate and our House, and women leadership across the country is something that's pretty common. It's just breaking that, as Hillary said, that final glass ceiling.
Interesting. You were involved, of course, in the making of the first African female democratically elected president in President Sirleaf of Liberia. Do you think that there are some lessons or any lessons that Hillary might need from Monrovia?
From Monrovia. Great, great question. I think that despite how different the countries are, President Sirleaf coming from a country that's one of the poorest in the world, where less than 5% of the people have access to water and electricity, and Hillary Clinton being at the land of plenty, even though they couldn't come from more different situation, there are so many similarities. And what I see in them is this sense of purpose, the sense of purpose from such a young age, and the sense of mission. And that's the similarities that I see in the two of them. I also see 30 years it took Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to emerge after three tries. And again, we can remember that her slogan was, Ellen, she's our man. Mm. She turned the tables on the stereotypical type of conversation in Africa. And I think Hillary, it's different because we're celebrating feminism and we're celebrating the emergence of women. But I have been asked what advice, what lessons. And I think last night I saw one of those lessons transmitted, which is people have become caricatures during this campaign. They become one-dimensional. And it's a toxic environment. I think we've all seen toxic talk what it can do in Africa. We saw that in Rwanda. We saw it in Liberia and Sierra Leone. And I think what we saw last night is focusing on the candidate's humanity. And I think that's the essence. And so if I had one piece of advice that President Sirleaf gave to me when I was at a very difficult time, it was to not get distracted and to follow your heart.
What about the other striking similarities? You're talking about two ladies who obviously come from Ivy League pedigree. You're talking about Ellen Harvard, talking about Hillary Yale.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true. Ellen, President Sirleaf, went to Harvard to get education that was not available on the continent, like a lot of African leaders have traveled. But they both did run in those high Ivy League circles, but that's not where they eventually merged. Where they merged was in the development circle.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Reverend, a lot of Africans normally do have a lot of hope. They are, in fact, very romantic about being associated with the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party, as it were. But here you are, day number three. You really haven't heard much, if anything, about the great continent of Africa from Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's as your colleague said earlier, you know, it's a little disturbing because it's not even just at the convention. In fact, even in the process leading to this convention, Africa, you know, really surfaced on either of the party. It really, really surfaced. In fact, there was a meeting here in town several months ago of the representatives of the two parties. And the Africa diaspora group met with them and said, okay, what about Africa? And one of them from the other party said, oh, we haven't thought of it. That was a response. And everyone said, oh, you know, but we haven't thought of it. But here's the point. Yes, it's true that many Africans, put their hope in this process, who gets elected. In fact, even to the extent that in 2008, one woman in Lagos tried to organize a fundraising event for the then candidate Barack Obama until the government stepped in and said, oh, you can't be sponsoring foreign government from here. So that's the extent of the sentiment. That has been there, but this time around, the sentiment is rather low. On the one hand, because of the toxic rhetoric you were referring to from the other side, and even though it's generating a lot of interest among Africans, but it's not a sentimental interest. Mm. It's an interest of caution. It's an interest of, whoa, where is this coming from? You know, by that, I mean the toxic rhetoric that has accompanied this process on both sides. And I think maybe that is why the Democratic Party, that normally would say something about Africa, in engaging this atmosphere is up to, as you said, the three, nothing. Nobody, you don't hear anything about it. So I don't know whether that is a prediction of what is to come or is also influenced by what is happening right now. And I would like to think that is not a prediction of what is to come.
But in fairness to the Democratic Party, couldn't it be perhaps really the lack of an active African diaspora, really?
You are right. That could be so. Actually, I remember an official of the State Department a few months ago addressing the Africa diaspora group at the Senate hearing here and said, we don't see you active enough. And she repeated it. She said, we don't see you come up enough. So yes, it's true that the Africa diaspora group has not been as active as it could be. And there have been times that on specific issue like the Africa Trade and Opportunity Act, AGOA, sometimes, you know, we've talked about presidential term limits, and a number of other things. But we haven't really engaged either of the parties in terms of this process of during the process of election. But the question is, given the significance of Africa to this country, not just on trade, not just in other relations, but the strategic importance of Africa to this country, I don't think that we should be waiting for a lot of promptings from the diaspora group to engage the issue.
If you look at the remittances, for example, from the African diaspora, to most of the African countries, really, you begin to see how important that community is. And yet, 2 years ago, when President Obama organized the U.S.-Africa summit, not even African presidents took off some time to talk or address or meet with the African diaspora.
Yeah.
What do you think needs to happen, really?
Yeah, that is true. There's a disconnect. I mean, really, African diaspora is the number one foreign aid giver to Africa. And yet, you have the leaders of those countries really not engaging the diaspora group. There have been times that the diaspora group tried to reach out to those countries, to those leaders, but some of them see the diaspora group as, quote, being too radical, especially when the diaspora group reaches out demanding justice issues, presidential term limits, you know, now the leaders just selling off land to any who want in terms of land grabbing. And so when the diaspora group tries to engage the leaders of Africa on justice issues, on human rights issues, on respect for the poor, and being a government that accounts not just for the elite, but for the common good, so many of them tend to back off. So there is a disconnect there. And I think perhaps we need to come back to the drawing table. By that, I mean the diaspora group, to see how can we engage the continent in a different way.
How can we indeed? We have obviously been in one of the most important capitals, frankly, in the world. This is a city where some of the decisions that affect everyone around the globe are made.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes meet you on Capitol Hill, interacting with senators and congresspersons. What do they think that needs really to come from the African diaspora in order for the African diaspora of the continent, really, for that matter, to count, to be on the table?
You know, there's something internal here. I don't know how to say it without having to make it look like a negative thing. But I think sometimes the diaspora groups are a little splintered, you know?
Does it vote, for example?
Pardon?
Does it vote?
Okay.
Does it mobilize people?
Yeah.
During a campaign season?
Yes. No, it doesn't. That's the point. You know, they're splintering there. Because when they have, when they've teamed up together, things happen. A case in point, unfortunately, it was a negative impact in Chicago years back, when one of the senators had pressed the dictator, the General Abacha. Mm-hmm. And the diaspora group there got mad and started mobilizing and eventually get the senator voted out of office. Okay, but why not use that energy on a continuous level?
That's what is lacking. You're talking about the former female senator, correct?
Yes, yes.
She used to be on the payroll of General Sani Abacha,
yes.
I gather.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so we haven't seen that level of engagement. And so we have groups here focusing on this, groups here focusing on that. But we at Africa Faith and Justice Network, which we look at the continent in its entirety, we try to bring groups here together. And sometimes it's rough, it's tough, because they have each have its own project, agenda, and focus. And we keep reminding the African diaspora of a very interesting African proverb: when spider webs unite, they can tie up a lion, you know?
Very interesting, very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Ayen Bior. Ayen, take it away, please.
Well, thanks, Shaka. And still to come, we'll unveil some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. We'll be right back.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidey-Uwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen. Take it away again, please.
Well, thanks again, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question. Thousands of delegates, protesters, and media are in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania this week for the Democratic National Convention. Hillary Clinton is set to accept the party's presidential nomination on Thursday and officially become the first ever female candidate for the White House. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what do you expect Hillary Clinton to say about Africa at the Democratic National Convention? Well, starting off the conversation is Manny Alcado Cossi with our letter of the week. Our letter of the week comes from Manny Alcado Cossi from Tanzania, who writes, I expect Hillary Clinton to say good things about Africa and to make various promises to Africa, but the problem has always been how to implement them. Exploitation is the only big agenda when it comes to Africa. I expect Clinton to be like other U.S. presidents, including President Barack Obama, who invests heavily on the continent, but they have never walked the real talk to make tremendous change in Africa. Well, thanks, Manny, for giving us that opinion. And before we continue, I'd like to thank all of you for using all our social media platform to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOADemConvention. And if you haven't yet, please do follow us at VOAShaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Otega, who writes, still hypocritical policy, nothing will change. We have another tweet from Rego Herbert, who writes, she will embark on foreign policy ties between African countries and America and fight against terrorism. And our last tweet is from Martins, who tweets, that the whole world will stop accepting stashed away funds from African leaders. The leaders mind their own business. Well, now let's move to a comment from Facebook fan Vincent Atuma from Nigeria, who writes, I expect Hillary Clinton to work closely with African governments to ensure the progress of democratic ideals that will bring about peace and economic transformation of the continent. Well, Shaka, our audience has given us a lot to think about. What do you say?
Very interesting indeed. River, it is all yours. Your reaction, please.
Reaction to the comments.
That is correct.
Yeah, so reaction to the comments. So last night at the Democratic convention, there was a speaker who was involved in sexual trafficking. She talked about 3 years in California until she got the ability to break free and to leave. And I think what we're going to see at this convention is less a focus, unfortunately, on Africa and what Hillary Clinton will commit to Africa and more thematic focuses. Mm-hmm. And I think the thematic focus about stopping sexual trafficking, but also the emergence of women and of girls and the importance of education and saying that the right to education for a girl is a human right. I think that's what we can expect from Hillary Clinton at the Republican convention. We heard nothing on Africa. And I think it was not, well, I think at the Republican convention, from what I understand, I'm not sure there's a policy advisor now for Donald Trump on really? Africa. Yeah, I was trying to do my homework today before I came on the show, knowing it was you. And I was trying to figure out if there's a policy person. I was on the phone all morning, and I was told not yet, that that type of policy will be, you know, will be developed. And so it was not a priority to think about it before a convention. I think for Hillary Clinton, it's intuitive to her. She knows the continent as well as all of us. She's been traveling the continent probably, what, 3 decades. And so I think people know what to expect for her. The only other thing I'll share is that there's a nostalgia for George Bush on Africa. People love George Bush on Africa for what he did for PEPFAR, for the focus that he had. I think the difference on this election is that people know what they're going to get from Hillary Clinton. They know her commitment to poverty, development, democracy, women and girls, sexual trafficking, good governance. So we know that. She's a known person. We even can envision who she might put in the spot to sit over Africa. But with Donald Trump, there's great uncertainty from my colleagues in Africa, a fear that the almost xenophobic policies could translate to some of the unwillingness to look at Africa as a partner and more as an area of concern.
Talking about Donald Trump, you say that you had actually to do your homework.
I did.
Knowing that you're going to be interacting with Shaka Sally.
I did.
What is that supposed to mean?
That means I knew that you're a tough interviewer. I know that you want information that has not yet come out. And I was trying to see if I could find, okay, who is Trump's foreign policy person who's going to be on Africa? And Shaka, I did not succeed on that point. But I think that what the comment I got was, it's coming. But just getting back to, and I'm sure all of us have conversations on the continent, but there is a fear and a concern because Obama has been looking at Africa as a partner. We have Power Africa, entrepreneurship, trade, Feed the Future. We see Africa as an opportunity. There's a fear that Trump's people could see it as a place where bad things could come to the U.S.
Unfortunately, the time happens not to be our best ally. Okay. We have to go to Ayen. Ayen, any more reaction from the audience, please?
Absolutely. In fact, let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Calvin Kafodja from Malawi, who writes, Hillary Clinton will only continue the good work that she and her husband have already started here in Africa. They already have a foundation here in Malawi, and we love her. And our last Facebook comment comes from Johnson Tendeka Bakas from Uganda, who writes, U.S. policy for Africa is the same, whether it is implemented by a Republican or a Democrat. These speeches by Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are the usual political rhetoric. Well, Shaka, two very different but very interesting comments here. What's your take?
Very interesting. The good Reverend, your reaction?
I think both comments, capture both sides of the debate, because there are people who think, regardless of who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, that person is going to look out for America's interests first and foremost.
So that,
in fact, that is there. I know that, but the other side who sees what the Democratic nominee has been doing in terms of women and children and standing up for the rights of women, not just an African issue, but globally. So that might have consequences, in terms of promoting the protection and education of young women. Probably that she might invest in doing that in Africa. But I think the overall view, I did call some of my friends talking about doing the homework, I call a friend today at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. I said, okay, what do you think? And he was reflecting more the view of the second, who gets very cynical about what is going on. He said, well, we sit here and we watch the rhetoric, we watch the hateful speech, and it's really going nowhere. But then he said, we were very excited when Obama was a candidate and became president. But then we overestimated what he can do. And he said the structure in America's political system is such that Obama would have loved to do more, but the structure didn't allow him to do it. So regardless of who comes in, and the person even went forward to say that, you know, if Obama with ties to Africa, you know, was not accomplishing much, I don't see that somebody else, given the atmosphere in the U.S. today, I mean, the ideology that drives the nominee Trump and what drives Sanders, on the other hand, that whole reaction against the establishment might stand in the way of whoever occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So there is more a sinister view of it that is reflected in the second remark.
I see. Well, thanks again for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate with us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa program page on our website. Or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, political turmoil continues to destabilize the government in South Sudan. President Salva Kiir has sworn in Taban Dengai as the new first vice president. He replaces Riek Machar, whose whereabouts are unknown since he fled Juba 2 weeks ago following fighting between the two men's rival forces. An in-depth discussion on South Sudan. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today we are talking about the African diaspora's reaction to the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Our distinguished guests are K. River Levinson, President and CEO, KRL International LLC, and the Reverend Aniedi Okule, Executive Director, Africa Faith and Justice Network, based here in Washington, D.C. Again, of course, Reverend Aniedi, I have to say again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
You're most welcome.
Profoundly honored as well.
Well, I have to say, frankly, that I can't wait to talk to you about your great book next time.
Next time, that would be great. May I add one hope about what I hope, whether Hillary Clinton wins or not, mm-hmm. but because she's made history as the first woman to lead a major U.S. political party, mm-hmm. I hope that for Africa, it translates into supporting women political leaders in Africa, mm-hmm. and not only helping them, celebrating them when they win, but recognizing what they need to do to get there and supporting them when they leave office, because I watch women political leaders on the continent, and sometimes I feel that they're still more likely to be scorned if you're an ambitious political leader
right.
than celebrated.
Right.
And it's something that I would hope whatever candidate comes.
Right. But some might also say, River, that it shouldn't simply be a woman because it is a woman. It should be a woman who can deliver.
Absolutely.
Who can deliver?
Absolutely.
Who can give hope? Who can give promise? Who can make sure that people can aspire to have a life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
I completely agree, but I still think that there are institutional barriers, there are cultural barriers, there are financial barriers that limit the women who are able to participate at that political level.
Correct.
And often if they don't have a sponsor or somebody that from the outside who recognizes their potential and helps to lift them up. Fighting in that male-dominated space is difficult. So yes, it's all about delivery, but it's also about the opportunity to compete on a level playing field.
I understand. You know, earlier I was talking with a good reverend about the role of the African diaspora in this town. And there are many, and they are very highly educated, very highly exposed. Clearly, they are positioned to make a difference to the mother continent. You know, I have been in this country, and I have benefited, in fact, from some of the contributions made by the Jewish diaspora, for example.
Correct.
And I take it, if I have done my homework correctly, that you happen to be one of that group.
That would be me.
That would be you.
What is
it that we can learn from you, from your experience, frankly, because you are the sort of people, frankly, who everybody takes very seriously in this town, and indeed around the world.
Well, I think the Jewish lobby, whether it's through AIPAC or others, has been so effective, and they have defined the agenda between the U.S. and Israel. If you're anti-Israel in the Congress, it's almost hard to sustain your position. I think the distinction with Africa, if I may be so self-critical, is that the diaspora hasn't come as of age as a political force, either to look at priorities in terms of getting people elected, but maybe more importantly the agendas that are put to Congress. You know, the Power Africa agenda, the PEPFAR agenda, the Feed the Future agenda, those were done by NGOs. Those were done by think tanks. It wasn't an issue that the African diaspora brought to the table. So I think there are two levels of maturity. I think one is to say, this is my continent, my agenda, these are my issues. But the other is the power of political mobilization. I've only seen it come together actually on some immigration issues, like temporary protected status or things. Things like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm being too self-critical,
but I wanted to mention that. Because, you know, when I ended up my talk the other time saying that African diaspora group are yet to realize the power, I was quoting their proverb, when spider web unites, they can tie up a lion, you know. So there is a focus on, you know, things that are secondary rather than look at the overall picture. And so because they are doing that, there is no unity to focus on the things that matter at the governance level.
Okay. We'll come to that a little bit later. But right now, duty calls, I have to go to the continent itself.
Okay.
It's now time for the callers themselves, which, of course, is the lifeline of the show. Good evening, Tefa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Tefa, can you hear me?
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
You are terrific. How are you today?
I'm good, Shaka. I'm good.
So,
Shaka?
Yes, sir.
My regard to your guest in the studio.
Thank you.
First and foremost, let me also congratulate Madam Hillary for this wonderful achievement she's able to achieve in life as a woman, first woman, to be given this kind of responsibility.
You know, Tefa, there is a saying in America that it isn't over until it is over, my friend. You have to wait until she accepts tomorrow.
Well, Shaka, I have no doubt in my mind that she's going to accept this responsibility. Therefore, I have this thing to congratulate her in advance before she accepts the responsibility. Shaka, come to the main issue. Me as an African, I want to see the old status quo that existed between U.S. leaders and some African leaders to be changed by Madam Hillary Clinton when, inshallah, she be elected to become next president of the United States after Barack Obama. Because we cannot continue to allow some dictators to be working hand in hand with a country like the United States, a country that believes in rule of law, accountability, to be dealing with the sort of dictators. So my humble appeal to Hillary is that when she got a nod, she should make sure that she changed this status quo, because we cannot continue to maintain it. Enough is enough. She should look into the faces of those dictators across Africa and tell them that I cannot work with you until you approve your human rights record, until you show that you support the democracy. What you are talking in Africa, Shanta, is not a democracy. Some of the countries, it's not a democracy. Let's say the fact that the United States government continue to work with them because of the so-called interest. It is time for the United States also to look at our interests and say,
Thank you. Thank you, Tefa. I think your point is well made. Let's go to Nigeria. Good evening, Buba from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. It's Buba.
Usually terrific. How are you?
Fine, sir. I'm just fine, sir.
Your question, Buba?
Yeah, my question has to do with foreign policy and the convention. So also with the diaspora aspect of Now, sir, we here in Africa, the issue is we are yearning for lighter American foreign policy that will suit we Africans here. So, I mean, diaspora in Africa, it should not only vote wisely but judiciously, so that we accept our yearnings to be fulfilled in this convention. Thank you very much and stay blessed, sir.
Thank you very much to Buba. Let's go to Edmund from Ghana. Good evening, Edmund. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. This is Ed from Uganda in a small called Mbale.
Very interesting, Edmund. It looks like Ghana and Uganda rhyme.
Somehow a bit. But Shaka, one thing which I want to tell you is that I personally and with the other Ugandans, we are happy of the convention of the Democratic Lady. Shaka, America, look. Hello?
Yes, please.
Shaka, America changed some 10 years ago. When the black president was elected, that was the change of America. And I'm telling you, surprises are coming. The mother of the nation, the mother of the world, she's going to make it a president. She's a woman. She has given it, and she has rest. And everyone knows that she was. There is a saying, Shaka, which says, every successful man, there is a strong woman behind. Shaka, I'm telling you, the Bill Clinton, he himself, Mzee, you saw how he performed. It was because of the strong woman behind. So this woman never stopped to be behind the curtain. She came as a foreign state lady, and she performed.
Thank
you. She has been it. So I know she will perform. And if you remember, we are there.
Thank you. Someone, of course, might add that behind every smart, beautiful woman, there is a great guy.
Usually.
Well, how do you react to what you just heard? It's a lot of stuff here.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can see that Africa has a lot of expectation out of what happens in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the White House. Why is that so? Why should it be like that? Is it because America or the United States of America, as the only superpower, has the moral obligation to deliver, really, to deliver a good life for the world?
I think the fact is that the U.S. is the essential power now in the world. It's the essential power for change. It's the essential power for impact. I wanted to just go back in choosing the hero. I tell the story of the Liberian president who spent three tries trying to be president, but it wasn't until the U.S. came in and got its policy right and supported an African peacekeeping force that there was the space for true democracy to emerge. And I think we have to recognize that that remains the expectation around the world, that the U.S., because of its history, because of its responsibility, and also because if it backs off, there's uncertainty and turmoil. And we're seeing that now with the emergence of ISIS.
But River, when you talk about Aaron Johnson Sirleaf's victory back in 2006, was it? 2005, and she assumes office 2006.
Correct.
That in fact, it is perhaps because the election was conducted by the United Nations. That if it had been conducted by a local electoral commission, the results could probably have been different.
Okay, perfect point. And I'd say that the U.S. was that came in with the Marines and the African forces to create the space. The U.N. came in and conducted the election. It was free and fair. There was no power of incumbency. There was no 1997 vote when Charles Taylor was there, and it was fear and it was patronage. So absolutely. But the only other thing I'd say to your first caller said that the Hillary Clinton, assuming she wins, I think everyone's hoping to assume she'll win from Africa, so we'll see, but assuming that she wins, they should not deal with strongmen or with dictators or people who have not participated in an electoral process, even though sometimes elections can be one man, one person, one vote, one time. But the truth is it's not black and white, and that the United States has to be able to engage in a way that changes behavior and still provides for people. All of the U.S. policies, whether it's Power Africa or any of those programs, they're designated by how the leaders take care of their people.
We have less than a minute.
Sorry.
You know, ironically, it was during Bill Clinton's administration that they coined some kind of concept that you had a new breed of African leaders who were supposed to be the beacons of hope for African democracy, from Asmara through Addis Ababa, Kampala, Kigali to Kinshasa. Uh-huh. And there's absolutely no democracy in those places.
Yes, and actually that's something that continues to give African analysts a lot of anguish, that for all the U.S. stands for, democracy, free speech, freedom, votes, and all of that, that we continue to support those names you have mentioned, that they do anything, you know, they conduct election, and it's anything but free and fair. For example, the remark that Obasanjo made about the concluding election in Uganda, saying anybody who believes in the sanctity of democracy cannot put a stamp to what happened there, and yet we remain friends. So I think it's important that when the next president comes in, to try to disengage from business as usual.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally, and on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, K. River Levinson, President and CEO, KRIR International, AeroRC, and the Reverend Aniedi Okule, Executive Director, Africa Faith and Justice Network, based here in Washington. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.